Welcome, everybody, to the Chinchilla Picking Podcast. As always, we hope to be entertaining, educational, and uplifting because we want everyone to make money. My name is David Underwood, and I am joined by the one and only Baron of Bonds, Brandon Beaver. Brandon, how are you?
Big Cowboys win on Saturday night. Huge Cowboys win there. Totally legit. Nothing at all controversial about that whatsoever. I will be nominating NFL head referee Brad Allen for president in November of this year. He's going to be a write-in candidate for me. True American patriot, that guy is for sure.
Hey, you know, take him as you get him, right? Take what you get. That's all I got to say. Good game. I did not watch all of it. I watched part of it. I'm not a fan of either team. But so
are
I was
you,
like,
are you aware of the controversy at the end of the game?
I don't know the details, but I've seen a lot of headlines already this morning about it.
We'll just leave it at that. There was no controversy. Totally legit win.
All right. Fair enough. Well, I want to say, you know, welcome to 2024. All of our listeners, thank you for sticking with us in 2022. We had a 30% growth in listeners over that last year. We appreciate any new listeners. We appreciate everybody. We're always here to help any way we can, answer questions, give you definitions, tell you what a term means, or maybe go in detail about what does this mean about these options or what have you. Whatever question you have, throw them at us. We are here to help as best we can. And we look at the 2024, we have a full year ahead of us. As always, Brandon will make his January prediction at some point this month. He always does. How the year's going to go. And, you know, he's actually pretty accurate too. I'll give him that. You are pretty accurate, Brandon, in your January predictions. So I'm looking forward to whether it's this show or a week from now or 2 weeks from now. Usually at some point in January, you're like, all right, this is how the year's going to go. Maybe we'll get it this show. Who knows? But thank you. Thank you for everyone listening. And if you are new, please hit subscribe. Go ahead and hit follow. That's how we organically grow this podcast and continue to grow and grow year over year as we do. We hope to have reached thousands and thousands of more people this year. We created, 1,800 minutes of podcast time last year. So we're hoping to do, let's break 2,000 this year. What do you say, Brandon?
Yeah,
break 2,000.
Let's do it.
All right. We've been doing more TikToks. So we're slowly adapting that there. So there you go. All right. So rules. Everybody knows rules. Oh, I can't say that because I'm stealing that from, you know, other kind of, you know, social media platforms. Rules. Here are the rules. Brandon and I get together 5 to 10 minutes before the show and we tell each other what we're going to talk about. We saved the live discussion, the back and forth, the bitter, the banker, whatever you want to say. I mispronounce those every single time now. It's been 3 years and I still can't do that. But anyways, the back and forth is live discussion for Brandon and I that you hear. We hope that we entertain, we educate, and then we give you some uplifting stories of how some people have done well. So Brandon, take it away like always.
All righty. So let's look into a little bit about what happened last year and some outlook for this year. Okay. So last year, the private equity deal making that dropped roughly about 40% to $846 billion globally, from $1.44 trillion in 2022. And that was already significantly down from the prior year. Nearly 20% decline in overall deal volume. And there were some large deals signed in the oil patch, for example, Exxon's $60 billion purchase of Pioneer Natural Resources and Chevron's $53 billion purchase of Hess. David Camo, he's the global head of financial sponsor mergers and acquisitions at Goldman Sachs. He said the last time he remembers a slowdown to this degree was 2009. And there's a growing recognition within that community that this cannot go on for much longer. And there's some signs, by the way, that deal making is about to pick up, in particular, the Federal Reserve signaling that they might cut interest rates 3 times this year. And I think that's what's going to happen if, you know, if we have smooth sailing, still continue with the with a soft landing approach to the market, and the idea that we're going to have a soft landing, if that does happen, deal making is probably going to pick back up by a lot. Go ahead, Dave.
Soft? Did you just say soft landing? Have you swapped sides and came over here yet?
No, I think it's a possibility that it might happen. So if that does happen, then deal making picks back up when interest rates get cut.
So here's one thing that is going to really push for the soft landing and for the deal making. What you're focused on right now is the deal making, is the fact that currently these federal student loans, they have started the repayments of these, but they're holding off on any kind of consequences for not paying them until the fall of this of 2024. Until the fall of this year, that's when they're going to start instituting the consequences again. That's when they start, you know, going into collections or, you know, garnishing wages, things like that at that point. So people still have a few more months where they could just miss a payment if they so choose. But they'll eventually start garnishing wages and start getting that money back somehow. So it's pushed off a big problem that I foresaw has now been pushed off even further out.
Well, private loans do garnish, but I don't think the federal government, the loans from, I don't know, what's the name of that company that does the federal loans for student loans? I forget which one it is.
There's so many different things out there.
I don't think they do garnish for the federal government, the federal loans at least.
I don't know, man. I paid off my loans after college. I don't have any student loans anymore. I paid mine all back. I don't know. I don't personally know anyone who's in that kind of state. Everyone I know, my personal circle, continued to make payments even though they paused all payments. So they just paid it into a savings account and or a money market fund, and it gained interest. And they just kept making the payments into this. And once they restarted it, they just flooded it off and took a big chunk of their student loans out.
Yeah, that's true. Okay.
So, I mean, that's everybody I know. I don't know anyone who has not made the payments. So, personally.
Do you think that if people start defaulting in the fall, we probably won't see the effects on that on the overall economy for another 3 to 6 months after that.
And that's the thing. And think about it. What do we have this year? Presidential election. Why are we pushing the soft till the fall after the election? And so they can blame it on whoever's next.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, if it does start to turn, there will be an avalanche of deals. That's according to a Goldman Sachs representative. The two IPOs that we covered this year, Birkenstock Holdings, they're up around 20% since their debut. Instacart is down about 20%.
We covered ARM as well.
Yeah, ARM. I don't even know where they're at. I think
they're doing very well. They're at 75. They IPO'd at 65, so they're up $10 per share on that. So.
As for the next year, so far KKR is in talks to buy a stake in a company called Covidity, and that would value that healthcare technology company around $11 billion. DocuSign is exploring a sale, and that might rank among the largest leverage buyouts in recent memory. They're looking for an acquisition by Synopsys, and that would be a market value of nearly $30 billion, and that could be struck in early 2024, but it remains to be seen. The one that's been in the news this month, announced December 18th, this is a $14.1 billion deal by Japan's Nippon Steel to acquire U.S. Steel. And a takeover of U.S. Steel that would make Nippon Steel, by the way, they're one of the world's largest steel makers already in Japan. They don't have much of a market share here in the United States yet. That's what they're looking to do. But it would make them immediately one of the top suppliers to the American auto industry. And it would give them access to the U.S. to specialized steel used in electric vehicles, along with steel appliances used in construction materials. U.S. Steel would retain its name, brand, and it would retain its headquarters in Pittsburgh, supposedly. And they're valuing the Pittsburgh-based U.S. Steel at $55 a share, currently trading at $48 a share. This is about a 13% markup from where it's at right now. The deal is expected to close in October, but, you know, we got to get approval from the shareholders and regulators. And the regulators are already looking at this with a lot of scrutiny. They're saying that, you know, domestic ownership of steel production is vital to the U.S. national security and military production. Senator J.D. Vance of Ohio said that U.S. steel was critical to the U.S. defense industrial base, and he's going to oppose the deal. It's also facing scrutiny from U.S. steel workers, the union. And a quote from them was that we remained open throughout this process to working with U.S. steel to keep this iconic American company domestically owned and operated. David McCall, that's the president, and that's what he said. And he said, instead, it chose to push aside the concerns of its dedicated workforce and sell to a foreign-owned company. Earlier this year, Cleveland-Cliffs made a deal, or not made a deal, but put a deal on the table to buy U.S. steel that the U.S. steel workers actually approved. But U.S. steel itself declined. Senator John Fetterman, he's a Democrat. His home is across the street from the U.S. steel plant in Baddeck, Pennsylvania. He said that he is committed to doing anything that he can do using his platform and his position to block this foreign sale. Dave, did you have a comment here?
I mean, look, I get that, you know, this is an iconic American brand. The founders of U.S. Steel, for those who do not know, they are Andrew Carnegie, J.P. Morgan, and Charles Schwab. All three very famous names. So those are some of the founders. You also have, you know, Elbert Gerry and William Moore, but we don't really know them too well. But the very famous names is iconic brand. However, if you believe in capitalism, free enterprise, then you understand that, you know, we can sell to that because there are other American steel companies now that can, if we want to only, the government only wants a contract with American-owned steel companies, contract, change your contracts with them, you know? Yeah. Have a bigger contract with Cleveland-Cliffs. Have a bigger contract with other companies, and U.S. Steel will then lose money and disappear. And that's how capitalism works. Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, it's very simple. So if they want to make this move, you know, I say let them. I don't see – there's no monopoly issue here. There's no antitrust issue here. It's just, you know, hey, we want to keep this American brand here in America. But yeah, but you don't want to accept the offers American companies have offered. So
yeah, so there's no monopoly issue to me either, and there hardly ever is, in my opinion, in any of these mergers and acquisitions. It will give them, at least for the short term, a very large market share in U.S. and global steelmaking industry. But, I mean, that's not a concern to me. You know, you still got Cleveland-Cliffs around. I think they're one out of three major steel producers here in the United States. So they've already got a huge market share, if that's what you're worried about. I think the biggest concern here is selling to a foreign owned entity, but look, it's not like they're selling to a Chinese company or, like, you know, to a Russian company or anything like that. They're going to Japan, which is historically, since World War II at least, been a huge ally of ours. I see no problems in it, but it's going to face a lot of scrutiny. This is why there's still a 13% premium between the $48 a share and the $55 a share, right around those areas where it's at right now, because shareholders don't necessarily, you know, no, it's a flip of a coin right now if this deal is going to go through or not. This is going to be much more. There's going to have a lot more scrutiny on this than Microsoft's deal to buy Activision. A lot more.
Yeah, and I think the workers are more concerned that they'll just get rid of the union. Yeah, they'll just say, hey, you know what? You know, you can strike if you want to. We're just going to hire all new people.
But I mean, I'll be honest with you, even with inflation going down, the price of steel is probably going to continue to inch down a little bit. Surprisingly, it's only down, I think, about $1 or $2 a pound as far as steel goes for this year, despite inflation cooling off quite a bit. But I still think that U.S. steel's buy. And listen, I called this a buy. I said that I think it's a good deal back in July of 2020, and I was defending my position on that and going into the deep dive of the valuation of this company back in July of 2020 last year. You can go back and listen to the episode. It's called this this episode is rated X. It was $20 a share. Now it's $48 a share. I think on December 18th, when this deal was announced, the stock went from somewhere around 35 to 48. So it might cool off and give back a little bit as these, these concerns arise, and as more politicians come out and comment. But I still think it's a deal. I still think it's a buy, even if this does not go through. The reason for that being is with the recent uptick in electric vehicles, that's going to, be even more demand for steel. Recent uptick in deals for even semiconductors, which uses steel products in that. Those are, heavy customers of the steel industry. So I think U.S. Steel, with a price-to-earnings ratio right now of 10, is still a buy.
All right. Fair enough, man. Fair enough. Moving on, what you got next?
It might even be more of a buy, by the way, if this deal doesn't go through. $55 a share is kind of fair value to me.
I think it's going to go down if the deal doesn't go through.
If it doesn't, immediately, yeah, but over the long term.
But you see that as a buying opportunity if it drops immediately after the...
Absolutely. Sale. So maybe dip in a little bit right now and then wait if the deal doesn't go through or if there's even more concerns that arise. Then you cost average down and you just hold it for the long term. They've had some debt problems in the past, but I think they're working their way through them.
There you go. Not so. I've known some new traders who refuse to dollar cost average once they create a position, and I find that very weird because they have the extra cash sitting in their accounts, and I'm like, you started this position, you believed in the company, it took a huge drop. Why not just DCA? I don't understand why you won't DCA.
I agree. There's been some time where I didn't DCA only because I was still comfortable with the price that I had a company at, even if it had a huge drop and it became even more undervalued. And the only reason why I wouldn't DCA is if another company dropped really hardcore with it that I'd been looking to buy already and I bought that instead. But I for the most part, I do agree with you. I 100% agree with you with these drops and panic sells and things like that that tend to happen. That's gold.
Yeah, it's a golden opportunity. Golden opportunity, man. Yeah. All right, man. What you got?
Well, I just wanted to give out top two CEOs of this year. I think Jensen Huang of NVIDIA. Definitely. No.
Yeah, and, cheers.
I think Mark Zuckerberg deserves a top spot there too right now with a year of efficiency in Meta. I made a complaint last year, well, not last year now, but back in 2022 when we were in the midst of the bear market that I was bored and it didn't seem to be raising gold. But, buying General Electric at that time and buying Meta, that it did wind up being gold. And the year of efficiency for Meta and the turnaround in General Electric so far this year, this past year yet, have been very good. So,
yeah, Meta has a strong year coming up. A lot of advertisement going to happen this year. It's going to be a huge amount of advertisement. Lots of billions of dollars spent in there, and they're going to get a big chunk of that. But I do like their gaming system, the Oculus. I mean, that everybody I know so many more people now that have Oculus Quests and out there that are playing the VR gaming system. And I mean, it's getting crowded out there in the VR world now. It's starting to feel more like an Xbox or a PlayStation type situation.
Well, Jensen Huang, he realized that the and this was back probably in the late 90s when he realized that the chips that he was creating not only worked in the computers that they were manufacturing then, but the chips that he was creating could also program AI. And he started making the shift into AI about 20 years ago. Yeah. So, and it's paying off now.
Yeah, future forward looking, planning ahead, always pays off. Good opportunity. So talk about planning ahead. If you don't mind here, I'll switch gears. I want to talk a little bit about January, kind of what to expect. And I'm going to talk about it in regards to we just had a Santa Claus rally, all right? So, what's a Santa Claus rally? Some people may, that's typically done in the last 1 to 2 weeks of the year. And if the market as a whole goes up positive, then it's considered a Santa Claus rally. I got some notes here. The 7 days have historically, so these 7 days, that's between Christmas and New Year's, have historically shown the higher stock prices 79.2% of the time. So it happens quite often. So there's a lot of reasons for this. And this is from, they started compiling this data from 1950 to 2022. So, and they've had 58 times that they've had a Santa Claus rally of the 73 years they've been watching it. There's a lot of different reasons that people would do this. It could be just, you know, traders moving money around in the year, trying to, you know, taxes, or, you know, different things happen, right? But Santa Claus rally also helped with the first couple of weeks in January in regards to a lot of stock traders, or a lot of people get those Christmas bonuses because the company did very well, or they get their year-end bonuses. So in the financial markets, that's something that's yearly done, is a year-end bonus if you performed well. They'll take that money and then they'll invest it in the first couple of weeks in January. So that's where you get a good start to the year. Now, it doesn't always happen that way, because sometimes in January we get bad news, or we already start with job cuts immediately. First thing January, first couple weeks, job cuts, job cuts, job cuts. But, you know, you have this opportunity to look at that and take this into effect, right?
Mm-hmm.
Also, people will start buying stocks because they believe that this Santa Claus rally is going to continue, and you have a January effect, right? So those are some things that may be happening. Some investors also do tax loss harvesting in January, or repurchases of stuff they sold in December and January for tax purposes. So there's a lot of different things that go on in January. But there's this thing also called a January barometer, right? So if you Google this, you'll actually see this is a real thing. It's a theory that claims that the returns experienced in January stock market predict the performance of the market for the whole upcoming year. I don't know how accurate this is. again, this started in 1972, but it has an accuracy ratio of 84.5%. I don't know where they're pulling this data from on this here. I was reading through it. I didn't get a whole lot of time to read through this. And I believe it was from the Stock Traders Almanac that Yale produces. And 84.5%, how January goes is how the rest of the year will go. So that's something to look at come January. But it's also a good time to – okay, go ahead.
Well, I was going to tell you, last year we had a January rally, December and into January. And then somewhere closer to Q2, we had a little bit of a downturn. That led to, I think, a market correction, but then we came right back up. And so if you're looking at last year kind of shows it too.
Yeah. And market corrections are good time. So if you believe that the overall market's going to have a good year, market corrections are a good time to buy in, or put some money to work for you. So, I mean, it's never a bad time to start. I wanted to start off with that. Like 2024, say you've been listening to us and you haven't really started investing yet. You know, I talked about the person that this last year in 2023 that started doing $20 a paycheck, and that's all they can afford. They're that level of paycheck to paycheck broke. Now at the end of 2023, they had seen a growth of over 35% return on their money with just $20 a paycheck. And, you know, we're going to be sitting down in the next couple of weeks going over 2024, the plans and goals. But the point of it is, you know, they only had a few hundred dollars saved up by the end of the year, but they made money with that.
Yeah.
And now they're seeing that. So now they're able to visually, okay, if I can funnel more money into this, I could create more passive income for myself. And then it will take the weight off of my job and where I'm at. And it's a good opportunity here to grow my own retirement and savings fund, because they do have a 401k, but this was another avenue for them to create funds, because there was paycheck to paycheck so much that when a car breaks down, they didn't know how they're going to pay for it. You know, I'm not saying you should use your stock account money for that. You should have a savings account for that, where you have like at least, you know, 4 to 6 months of savings saved up. But if you don't, you know, your stock account can also help with that. So these are things that I try to teach to help change people's lives and in 2024, it's a good opportunity to look at, all right, I don't have any money for investing, but I know these guys are up there trying to help me. Maybe all I can do is that $20 a paycheck like the other person that Dave helped. You know, if that's all you can do, that's all you can do, then that's great. You know, there's other people that I've worked with last year that started doing $50 paycheck, and they bought into Amazon. So if, I don't know if you guys know where Amazon went this past year, but it was started off the year at $90 a share. Now it's at $150. So they've had a good return this year as well. There's other people that have bought into Nike. I didn't recommend Nike. I just want to preface by that. But we were looking at companies and they really liked Nike. And so they've been buying into that, and they own like a few shares of Nike now and a few shares of they started buying into Amazon to Google near the end of the year. So I give these examples of, it's never too late to start, but you know, you got to start somewhere. So if you can only do that $20 paycheck, fine, let's start there. We'll build it up. We'll get you up and get you going and get you moving. One thing I don't want you guys, if you're listening, to fall into is all these derivative markets. If you're a new investor, I would, it's my recommendation to stay away from the derivative markets at first.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, you'll lose so much money. I've seen it time and time and time again. They lose so much money in the options and binary options. I know crypto.com recently came out with binary options play of, will Bitcoin in 20 minutes be above this level, yes or no? And you put money, it's gambling, and you just put money on it. And I just am blown away of how that has just continued to, I thought binary options were thing of the past. Like, so many people lost money on it. The scams were out there. People saw that and they moved on, but now it's back again. And this time with cryptocurrencies.
It'll be back in full force again this year. If the Fed cutting interest rates pushes another stock market rally and influences more people to gamble.
Right. Well, I mean, you now have gambling. I saw an interesting statistic too, that if you actually gamble, a new gambler versus a new day trader, day trading will produce 98% of the time that people will fail. If they're new to day trading, they don't know what to do, and they just start off day trading, 98% of the time they fail. Versus gambling, you have an 85% of the time you'll fail. So you have a better chance of actually just going to the casino and winning than you do a day trading and if you don't know what you're doing.
So the key to the stock market is compounding. That's it. So it doesn't matter if you start out with $100 or $1,000 or $10,000. If you're making 35%, well, first of all, temper your expectations a little bit. You're not going to get 35% every single year. But think about, you know, that compounded over the course of the next 10 to 20 years and even longer than that. That's the key to gains in the stock market. That and patience.
Yes.
Patience pays. You know, you may see a stock that you really, really want to buy, but it's had a huge run. Having patience for that to come back down again, that'll pay off when you pull the trigger and buy it at a lower price. And, you know, as long as it's a good company.
Right. And then for grandparents or parents, if your child is being born or your new grandchild's being born, if you put $200 a month into just a regular fund that gives you the 10 to 15% a year, and you start it when that child is born, by the time they turn 20, you're going to have over $1 million in there for them already. So you may not, your generation may not be the one that actually sees the difference, but you could change your line, your generations to come.
So, and then Amazon, by the way, that had been sitting flat for almost a year and a half, maybe even 2 years. If you bought it then, and then you had patience for what you thought was going to happen to come to fruition over the past 12 months, it's up 82%. So break out your Amazon now.
Right. Yeah. And if you need help picking these out, reach out to Brandon and I, DM us. We'll be glad to help you. Brandon, do you have anything more, or can I move into my three articles here?
Go ahead.
All right, man. Nice, nice. Three article time. I love it. I love articles. It's one of my favorite times. Here we go. First one came out on December 29th of last year. it was via Reuters, and Marinme Day is the author's name here. The headline reads, Nokia expects it will not meet full-year financial targets. Surprise, surprise, I know. But finish, let me read a couple highlights of this and then I'll get your thoughts, Brandon. Finnish telecom gear group Nokia on Saturday said it would not meet its financial targets for the year as it cannot recognize revenue it would make from license renewal discussions that are expected to continue well into next year. Basically, this article goes in that Nokia is going to lose a lot of its licenses, and that's how they make a big chunk of their money right now is their software licenses and other licenses they have on phones because they were one of the early phone makers back in the day, and so they own a lot of the patents and licenses. They're going to lose some. Nokia's patent portfolio is built on more than 140 billion euros invested in research and development. It's comprised of around 20,000 patents, including over 5,500 declared essential to 5G. Nokia earlier this year has signed a new long-term patent license agreement with Apple as the current license between the companies expires at last year. But slowing sales of 5G equipment in key markets such as North America have squeezed profit margins of the company. AT&T chose Ericsson to build a telecom network, which took Nokia's shares to new low. The $14 billion five-year deal will boost Ericsson's share once in one of the largest telecom players in the world. So going on, Nokia goes on to say that you know they're not expected to make money this year. They expect net sales in a range of $23 billion, mainly all from patents, to $24 billion. It's targeting a savings between 800 million euros and 1.2 billion euros is how they're trying to do savings. And they may cut up to 14,000 jobs.
Okay. They haven't transitioned into business as well as people expected them to. By the way, I'm surprised that they're still profitable right now.
Right?
I think that's, you know, that's probably actually a pretty good achievement for them. I don't know what those patents are, you know, those patents, I don't know if they're going to actually make any big of a difference. Obviously, Apple sees some value in them. But
yeah,
I don't know.
So, I mean, I think Nokia is just a few years away from, if they don't make any changes or come up with something new, a few years away from disappearing or being bought out or something, you know, the patents get bought out by a bigger company that just wants to have them. So,
yeah. Speaking of companies that are on the downturn, did you see the Boeing news again this week?
No, I did not see the news, but I'm sure something was, hold up. Before you say anything, is it something with the supply chain?
No, it was with Max.
Oh.
Yeah, an airline found a few nuts and bolts missing on one an important part of the airplane, and they reported it to Boeing, and then Boeing went to other airlines and said, hey, are you seeing the same problem? And it turns out, like, yeah, there's a big problem with the Max again. And they haven't been grounded yet by the FAA, but I think Boeing is actually saying, you know, they sent out this warning to airlines, like, hey, you need to check these airplanes.
Are they sending out little hardware packages?
I guess.
Here, use these bolts.
You know, like IKEA did with the chest of drawers thing, and it's got like yes. A little Allen wrench.
Oh, man. Boeing just can't get it together, I tell you. All right. And that's why I would never buy that company, just because of stuff like that.
Not until All leadership right. changes.
All right, so here we go. Next article, Brandon. So this one's a little bit different, and I know this is not on your radar, but this is a sector of the world I was starting to look at the end of last year, and this is about Indian shares. So this is came across yesterday at 8:32 p.m. So it's just hot off the presses. It says Indian shares bonds seen rallying in 2024 on continued foreign inflows. So the bull run in Indian financial markets is likely to continue in 2024, as the author goes in to make his point. What they're saying is India's inclusion in the JP Morgan Emerging Market Debt Index will boost investments in government debt, while attracted valuations will keep funds flowing into the share market. They expect shares to see inflows around $30 billion in 2024, which it's not a lot. If you look at the American market index, $30 billion, I mean, sounds a lot, but, you know, they do in trillions every year back and forth. I'm talking about trading. But 2024 earnings growth will be around 15%. The index would also grow around 15%. So the index is also going to grow. Overseas investors bought Indian shares worth $20.7 billion in 2023. Their net debt purchases stood at $8 billion. So a lot of overseas investors buying into the Indian market is what the point this author is trying to make. The Federal Reserve's pivot towards rate cuts has also buoyed emerging markets. I don't quite get how what the Federal Reserve is doing is going to buoy the emerging markets as directly as it does American markets. But, you know, hey, if he wants to add it in there, sure, he can add it in there. He's an author. He can write this article how he wants. So, yeah, it goes in and it talks more about overseas. It mentions J.P. Morgan a number of times, how their investment is going to come in. And then it goes in at the end here. You have some fixed income at BNP Paribas Asset Management. He's talking about, you know, we're positive on India into next year as foreign inflows will pick up on the back of bond index inclusion. So India being added to a lot of different bonds and indexes is going to bring in a lot of money. So they expect the market to rally in the first 3 months because they believe the first quarter is when it's going to happen.
Yeah, I think that India's been a direct beneficiary of the geopolitical tensions with China. A lot of companies moving in, you know, manufacturing to India to try to get away from that. Emphases is a big Indian company. That's one that a lot of people might know. They just had a large AI deal get terminated. It was $1.5 billion. So the stock's fallen a little bit since then. Still up 94% year to date, though. So, oh, I'm sorry, not 94%, 1.55% year to date. I was looking at 5 years here. That might be a company to explore. I don't know how that $1.5 billion termination, how that, you know, I'm just now reading about that as we speak. So, I don't know how that's going to affect the company over the long run, but. I agree. I mean, you know, if I was going to go into emerging markets, first of all, pick a country, know what's going on in the country, know how their central bank is operating, you know their macroeconomic issues. Some other countries are actually dealing with deflation right now, like China is, for example, rather than inflation here in the United States. So the same issues that are affecting us here in the United States may not be affecting them in whatever, you know, emerging market you pick. But if you pick a country, make sure you get to know them. Make sure you get to know not just the company that you're investing in, but the country itself. You know, if you're buying a specific company, or you can just buy their index. But yeah, I think India would be the pick for me as well.
Yeah, and I agree with you on some of the reasoning there is people moving away from China, and India is a good place to plant seeds. I just worry about the commodities market over there because the articles I've been posting about the commodities market in India and China has not been good for either of them.
Yeah, a lot of corruption.
There is. And that's what you get. Unfortunately, you get some of that with emerging markets. But, you get it in sustained U.S. markets as well. We get corruption here, too. But, like, not to where we're shipping chunks of rock and we're saying it's nickel. You know what I mean? There's different kinds of that going on. But anyways,
Farmer Bro comes to mind in the United States. Remember him?
Yes, I do remember Farmer Bro. He actually did nothing illegal of what he did in regards to the EpiPen shots. It was they found other ways to get him behind jail for other things he did. It was just he was very, you know, that was just not moral, ethical.
Cool. Yeah, exactly.
It was legal, so he did not get in trouble for that, though.
Bernie Madoff, or the hundreds of companies that are listed on the American Stock Exchange that are shell companies.
Oh, dude, so many, and it's they're easy to spot now for me, but then again, I've been doing this for such a long time, so
I got tricked into going to one of those pre-America things. You remember pre-America? Do you know pre-America?
Prime America, yes.
Whatever they are, I don't know. I got tricked into going and do it, and they're. You know, and sitting through it, and they're like, we we're legit because we are a U.S. listed company. I'm like, that doesn't sense to me.
That doesn't mean it. Yeah, no.
I've been in the market for over a decade, and no, that does not mean you're legit.
Yeah. All right, last one here. This one came out on this morning at 8:27 a.m. So it's brand new news. Don't know how to say that. Reuters, no author listed, says ExxonMobil hands over operations at West Qurna 1 oil field to PetroChina. So U.S. energy giant ExxonMobil Corp has formally exited the West Qurna oil field in southern Iraq. They have handed over all its operations to PetroChina as the lead contractor, and deputy oil minister told Reuters on Monday. Senior Iraqi officials met with executives from ExxonMobil, PetroChina, and Basra Oil Company field near Basra to mark Exxon's complete exit and handover of its operations to PetroChina. And so it goes in to talk about how they were happy with the partnership before, but they're excited for the new ownership.
So wait a minute. After all this time in Iraq, and I don't want to get political, but China's getting the oil fields?
I knew that's where you were going to go with this, but I wanted to, yes, PetroChina is going to own the, well, not own, it's going to operate the oil fields for Iraq.
Great.
Yes. I know it's crazy too, but this goes on to the further point of the Chinese moving into Africa and Southern Asia countries and running their commodities because they wanted to move away from the United States and separate themselves. Well, China was the only other, was not the only other one, but the another main one out there that would said, "Hey, we could come in, we could run these for you."
Does the Justice Department not have to approve this?
No, it's in Iraq. It's not in American, not American soil. It's just handing over the running of this oil field. So, yeah. But again, it shows me another move of China moving into some of these other countries and operating them. I don't like some of the deals they've done, but we don't know the details that China has with some of these smaller countries. I've mentioned a number of articles over the last year on this that they'll have these outlandish terms with these smaller countries, and the smaller countries have to find a way to pay up, and if they don't pay up, China gets all kinds of land and agreements and mines and everything from these smaller countries. So then the smaller countries end up having to create inflation in order to pay China, and they're not allowed to post what the actual contract is as part of the contract.
Well, that's been the new form of imperialism for the past 80 years, and the United States and England have been both guilty of that as well.
Oh yeah, 100%. But I mean, again, that these countries, because of the move in geopolitical politics, has been to, you know, get rid of the, you know, European and America as our partners. The only other option was China. So China came in and has really push these contracts in on a lot of countries.
Okay.
So there you go. Those are my three headlines going into 2024, Brandon. Where are you looking at investing your money? Any thoughts right now?
I mean, at this moment in time, I just did Pepsi. I'm kind of sitting on the sideline and waiting for something else to happen to see where, you know, where the opportunities pop up. I don't have anything in particular in mind right now. I'm just kind of waiting for the money to show me where it's at.
Yeah, I mean, let's do a final thought, but take an extra minute on your final thought and just any final thought to start 2024.
I do think the higher risk investments, if we have that soft landing, we're going to go back into bull mode again. The higher risk investments are going to be going off the chain. You're probably not going to see another, you know, GameStop or AMC movie theaters or whatever, some, you know, situation like that with those, but it might manifest itself in other places like the binary options you were talking about in cryptocurrency. And if those things come up, if those hype stocks happen again this year in a similar fashion, just stay away from them. For most people, there's nothing but pain in that. For most people, you get some people who get lucky and then jump on stock twits and say, look how much money I made and how skilled I am. And they don't understand. They just got lucky. And eventually they'll probably lose all the money they made. About 65% still not on the soft landing side. But you know what? I'm not investing based on that either. My what ifs, I never buy stocks based on what ifs. I buy on what I'm looking at in front of me. And, I've said this a thousand times, no matter what your political leanings are, no matter what your ideas of what you think might happen are, you buy a stock when it becomes, a good value. And that doesn't even necessarily mean that the stock price has to come down. It could be that the company's doing so well that the earnings have surpassed what have been priced into the stock. And I think that was kind of where we were at with Pepsi about, and still are with about a month ago when I said to buy that and when I started dipping into it.
Right. There you go, man. There you go. All right. My final thoughts. I'm going to talk about Brandon. Thank you for telling me to buy Disney 85. I sold, took my money out
Good
as
time.
part of the Santa Claus rally. I appreciate you doing that. I had a big winner in Tesla again. I did have some losers this year. I went through a hard quarter in the third quarter, but fourth quarter turned into positives for me. And so I started making money again in the fourth quarter, but I made money in the first half too. So all in all, it was a great year. One bad quarter did not make my year because the other three quarters were well positive enough for me to do well. I will say I've had a lot of people ask about dividends. So, I mean, you could do a dividend company like North Atlantic Trade Tankers NAT or Altria MO. Those offer over a 10% yearly dividend. They don't really move much. They stay within their range. They're good dividend plays, but I wouldn't actually go that route. I wouldn't go that route for a 10% dividend. I would go the route of Microsoft. They give you a dividend, but there's also growth in the company.
Exactly.
Yeah. And so to me, that's worth it more. Yes, Microsoft pays a dividend, yay, but you also have a stock price that's going to continue to go up because they're making the right investments and moves. So that would be more my approach if you want to go with a dividend play. Rather than just the companies that are don't move, they stay within that range consistently, but they pay out a nice dividend. So it's kind of like, what do you want? And the problem if you're just doing strictly dividend plays also is, yes, you have a 8% dividend, but what if that company goes down 30% of stock price? Now you've lost a lot of money.
Right. So why not if you've got $1 billion and you just want risk-free money, just buy treasuries.
There you go. Yeah. I mean, those are my thoughts on that. To answer those questions for the people who asked, those are my thoughts. What I'm looking for this year is I'm going to wait and see how the first couple of weeks of January seem to be headed. What are the news headlines that come out? And then, just take my time and invest like I did last year. And I may have another third quarter like I did last year, but overall, over the year, I did very well. So year over year, I continue to grow my investments. I want everybody else to continue to grow their investments and keep asking questions, because the moment you stop asking questions, you stop growing and stop learning. So always reach out to any of us and we will reach back to you, or we'll announce it here on the podcast so that you can hear it. And then we'll try to do more TikToks and more social media this year. There'll be a continued push there. And if you want us to come out and to wherever you're at, your business, your coffee shop, your what have you, we did one live event last year. We could do more live events, and we could stream those live anytime. Cool. So
Cool.
as always, we hope that we have been entertaining and educational and uplifting, because we want everyone to make money.
How about them Cowboys? Have a good night.